Welcome to CC, the podcast where you see what others see.
Hi there. Good morning. So today, what are we talking about? Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? Ceci here. Is anyone there? Hi, my name is Ceci. I'm based in Berlin and I want to welcome you to CC, the podcast where you see what others see. In this season, we're talking about movement. And today, we will talk about ballet.
Her repertoire is immense, her character interpretation emblematic, and her dance quality breathtaking.
She's the first dancer in the Staatsballet in Berlin, artistic co-director of the National Dance Company in Mexico, and artistic director of Elisa Anton Dolan Foundation.
In 2019, she was awarded the prestigious Prix Benoît de la Danse, recognizing her as the number one ballerina in the world for her performance in Romeo and Julia by Nacho Duato for the Berlin Opera. Among many other prizes, she's been honored with the Dance Open International Ballet, the Soul of Dance in Russia, and the Marius Petipa Award, which together with the Prix Benoît are the four most important awards granted in the international dance world. She studied classic and contemporary dance at the Instituto Nacional de Bellas Artes y Literatura in Mexico, a path she continued at the English Ballet School in the UK. She obtained a ballet master's degree awarded by the Ministry of Culture in Germany and the John Cranko Schul in Stuttgart. Elisa Carrillo is also a member of the International Dance Council of UNESCO and of the Mexican Cultural Diplomacy Committee. She is Mexico's cultural ambassador and presides the Fundación Elisa Carrillo Cabrera Committee, a foundation she created to open opportunities for Mexican dancers to train abroad. She also hosts an annual gala called Elisa y Amigos and the international dance festival Dance Atlan, internationally recognized stages where the best dancers and companies of the world perform. The government of Estado de Mexico, where she was born, created the scholarships Elisa Carrillo Cabrera and named the concert hall in the Centro Cultural Mexiquense Bicentenario in Texcoco after her.
Good morning, Elisa. It is great to have you here today at the studio.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here with you, and I'm very excited to share a little bit about my life.
As we hear the music, we imagine the life of a ballerina to be a romantic sin, and the ballerina herself to be a precious being, a swan made human, walking through the streets, glowing among the crowds. Perhaps a bit lonely, holding the style bar, her side put on the front mirror. The light turned on, the front curtain opened, and the artist stepping out. Bunches of flickering petals falling from the sky, traversed from the backstage light, turned into flower beds to signalize the end of an emotional performance. In the distance, the clapping, followed by an elegant bow and a full smile. Elisa, is this perhaps in part a real image of a ballerina's professional life?
Well, I have to say, yes, there is this part of, let's say, a moment where you just feel so happy getting the applause of the public and feeling like you made the dream come true after so much work. But then there is the moment where next day you have to come and be alone again and practice and dedicate yourself and have discipline. There is this, I think it's so beautiful, the moment you come to this place, the stage where you work for that for months, for hours. And there are a lot of moments of happiness, moments of desperation, frustration also. But everything... I always forget things once I'm on stage and I feel the energy of the public. And of course, the moment where you're alone again and then you have to start next day, then it's a moment of I can say sometimes loneliness, yes.
Elisa, you started dancing at the age of 5, and we heard from the introduction that you studied in the UK. This was probably at a young age. How old were you, and how was it to leave your country, family, and everything you knew behind to enter this beautiful but very competitive world?
Well, I was 14 years old when I got the offer of a scholarship to go to London. And for me, there was not even a moment where I questioned myself. I just thought I have to go. I was 16 when I came to London, and very excited, very happy, but actually without knowing what I was leaving behind, because I was just pushed by these emotions and this happiness of going to a school where I could make my dream come true. So I think the real shock, it was the day my mother left me, because she came with me, and the moment I stayed completely alone was, until now, it really moves my heart, because you realize that after being in a family, I was very blessed to be in a family with lots of love and a lot of support from my brothers, from my parents, from the people I love. Suddenly being alone in another country, in another continent, with another language and other traditions was really, really difficult, I must say. But I think what gave me the strength was always this love I have for dance. And that's the thing that kept me going until now, because it's really difficult to leave everything behind, although they are always with me in my heart, in my thoughts. But it was not easy, especially because also there were many children that came with me dreaming with the same thing. And ballet is a beautiful career, but there's a lot of difficult moments that you have to experience through your whole career. It never ends. You always have, in a way, a competition. You always have to fight with your own self in front of the mirror.
So about this passion in ballet, when did you become conscious of having fallen in love with ballet? And was this progressive, or was there a special moment or phase when you thought, I cannot live without it?
Well, I have to say things happen super easy in a way, because my parents saw I had this wish to always move, to express myself, not trying to present people my emotions. And that's how I started to go to a ballet school. But at the beginning, it was more about thinking I'm going to walk straight and elegant. No, that was the first thought my parents had, because they knew I loved that, and without having the thought that I could do it in a professional way. But, you know, through the years, training, doing the classes, performing, the first time I stepped on stage in Mexico City in Palacio de Bellas Artes was, it was so magical that I think that was one of the moments what for me being, I was 9 years old, I had the possibility to have a real performance. I remember stepping into the theater and having the lights and feeling the smell of the costumes and feeling the energy from the public. That was the moment when I thought, I want to be here, you know. And I think this, of course, this changed with the years. It became something stronger, because then it just became my lifestyle. It just became part of me. And I must say, till now, of course, it's my job, but it's part of Elisa's life. It's part of my everyday. It's something that I understand that dance will be part of my life for, like, always.
Talking about falling in love, you're married to iconic Michael Kaniskin, who has been first dancer at the Stuttgart Ballet and then also at the Stadtballet Berlin. You both met at Stuttgart Ballet, I believe. So you have performed together lots and lots of time, rendering incredible performances. How difficult it is not only to work with your life partner, but to make it work the way you do. And what do you do when, for example, you're mad at each other and you must still need to dance in the most precious way as you do? Has dancing helped you sort your problems in some kind of way?
Yes, I think this is something that people always wonder, because it's normal that most of the ballet couples have problems sometimes working, because of course you are so close to the person, you are so open, you are so honest, that any emotion can come out easily. which these things don't happen with another partner, with somebody else, you will talk in a different way. With your own partner, you just open yourself. And this can be sometimes not nice, you know. But I think what's so special for me and Misha, my husband, is that we grew up together. We know each other's country. We love each other so much. And we had to learn to live with it. It was also a process of learning how to make things work. But I have to say, once you are on stage, things have to work. Things have to flow. And of course, even if you are upset or something didn't work or you are stressed, the moment you step on stage, you have to make magic. You have to work for that. And when you trust your partner like no one else in the world, then you know things will work. And of course, this is a discussion you can always have. But I have to say that sometimes when we had a situation that things were not going and then we come on stage and somehow, there is this moment where you have to be super professional too. And you trust the person you are standing next to. At the end of the show, it was very beautiful to know that we made it. And then things were perfect.
The story of ballet started around 400 years ago. From its beginning out of the Italian Renaissance, its transition to other aristocratic courtier across Europe, to becoming a professional discipline in the Russian Empire court, and finally as a technique performed around the world. It was not until 1830 that women began to be the central figure, as at the beginning it was men and not women who were important to ballet. What would you say are the most important changes suffered in ballet in terms of class structure, customs, gender? How is ballet nowadays in comparison, let's say, within the last 10 years?
Well, it has changed a lot. I think now it developed also in a different way. Already from the moment that I can tell you a ballet dancer has to be completely open to dance in a contemporary way, in a classical way. We add so many things to our own way of moving. I have to say, since I started my career, I was dancing at the Stuttgart Ballet, and it was a company where John Cranko worked a lot and created wonderful ballets where there were many of these stories where men and women were involved. Love stories, also sometimes things without a real story, but there has been always this wonderful work of partnering, of being with each other. And the way I experienced my career, it has been always as a good team making magic together, where the men shows the woman flying through the air and holding her, and she also needs him to be able to shine. So I have to tell you, for me, it has been a wonderful journey, because I've been enjoying this moment of men and women being together and creating something. Things have been changed, of course, and now there is a lot of there are many dancers that have now the opportunity to present themselves that before maybe they were not having the opportunity because of looking different. And it's also one of the things that happened to me, I must say. At the beginning of my career, I had always this idea of how a ballerina should look. And I always felt a bit different, you know, because of my roots, because the way I look. And through the years, I also learned that being different in ballet now is being part of being special too. And I think now ballet, it's opening a lot. It's giving the opportunity to any person in the world to show themselves, to present themselves on stage. And I have always the feeling that ballet is one of the profession that at this point it's very special, because men and women are able to show their strength and their beauty on stage together.
So following this order of ideas in an aesthetic way of looking at it, in terms of body structure and body language, I would like to know today, what would you say is the ideal body of a ballerina in terms of its aesthetics, as we said, and what the body can do physically? Is perhaps the desire of a more athletic kind of body? Because this is an example of a change we have been seeing in the Olympic gymnast.
Well, yes. First of all, I think nowadays things have changed a lot. For example, bringing more contemporary dance into the classical companies. That has brought also many things and even changing from the costumes. Nowadays, ballerinas have been more exposed, like dancing, let's say, sometimes just with a leotard or a unitard, so your body is really visible. And I think this has been bringing a bit more of the athletic side sometimes, you know, also because we have a lot of contemporary works where you the way your muscles look, the way your body looks is different. Of course, it's always one of the ideal things we have is that to have a very aesthetic and healthy look. You know, I think that's very important. Ballerinas now have to be exposed in another way, not just with a tutu or a long dress. Now we have to really show our body. And this is something, one of the things that the public really appreciates, to see actually what's underneath all these costumes, no? To see how the body functions. And I think this is something that is been also changing. There is a lot of public that sometimes were not attractive to maybe really classical ballet, but now introducing these contemporary moves and different costumes, different music, different sceneries have, I think that has brought out a lot of public to dance to.
And so that brings us to a sensitive topic that we thought it was important to treat, and these are eating disorders, sadly widespread due to a false picture created by our contemporary society of an unrealistic image of the perfect, successful person. I mean, not only in ballet, of course. And so in case of ballet, I believe that yes, of course, weight, long legs, arc feet, etc. are important. But from an audience point of view, at least mine, I can also see and sense how what you were saying, how a dancer's body speaks and the way it relates to music, how emotional it is, and how it expresses itself through rhythm. And my intuition is that eating disorders may have to do more with striving for perfection rather than weight itself. So I would like to ask you about your approach to this. And in your experience, has there been any changes or evolution in the teachings and understanding of ballet that have improved the environment to make it more empathic? And for all, especially regarding young women going into adulthood, having to deal with these hormonal changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think all the ballerinas at some point, we pass through these changes in your body, you know, which is normal. Nowadays, in most of the companies, there is a lot of people who can talk to you, who can give you advice, who can give you like conditioning training. There are many things that now the companies have, so people can always train because of course, it also depends on how many hours do you train, on what kind of ballet you're rehearsing. Sometimes you have more hours of work than less. But there are many things extra you can do, not just the ballet. You can add different kind of, you know, like cardio training. You can do Pilates, you can do gyrotonics, you can do many things to keep yourself in shape. I must say it's very important to understand who you are and your body, because everybody has a different body type. We all need to, of course, aim for a great shape for your own body. Of course, everybody knows, you know, a ballerina, the ideal will be to have a long neck, long arms, long legs, long proportions, which everybody wishes to have, you know, in order to make this aesthetic look wonderful. But every person has a great body and every person can come to an ideal shape and a ideal, more than a weight, because some people think it's just about being a certain amount of weight, kilos. It's not about that. It's also about how you look. You need to look healthy. And the way I've been experiencing, there is always people who have, they can have eating disorders. But nowadays, the way I live it is more about being conscious how to take care of your body, to be healthy, because if you also go extremely down in your weight, you can also get injured. So it's more about being conscious how to keep yourself healthy, how to be healthy with your own body instead of comparing or trying to look like somebody else.
And that reflects, of course, right, with the luminosity from the body and not trying to be perfect in a picture that it's in any case pure fiction.
Yeah, and I think also you have to also think that you dance with different dancers and you even think of your partner. You know, I have to be healthy to be able to be good for my partner too. It's not just, you know what I mean? It's about being conscious about the whole thing, and because dance is a lot about the view, how it looks. And I think a healthy body in your own way, it's always bringing the magic on stage.
Thank you.
2019 was an incredible year for you, Elisa. You were awarded the Oscar, the Nobel Prize in international dance world, the Benoit de la Danse for your performance as Juliet in Romeo and Juliet by Spanish modern ballet dancer and choreographer Ignacio Duato, also known as Nacho Duato. Could you tell us about the rehearsals, the communication with Nacho Duato, and how did you embody your character?
Well, I have to say this was one of the most special times in my career. Of course, getting the prize was wonderful, but I'm talking about the process. Learning Juliet from Nacho Duato was amazing. It was many months of work with my partner, getting to have a full-length ballet with this special body expression, you know, this contemporary movement. I enjoyed so much the premiere. Working with Nacho was amazing. The way he explains things, the way, for me, it was wonderful to speak to him in Spanish and to get different emotions every rehearsal. So it was a long process. I think it was around 6 months that we worked on this ballet. Then I got to do the premiere with my partner. Our premiere was a very special evening. And yeah, a few months after, I got an email where they told me I was nominated for this. I couldn't believe, because it was for something that I really enjoyed doing it. And getting this prize meant a lot to me. I think to all the people that helped me through my career, to my parents, to my family, my husband, all the people that believe in me and my country. Because getting this prize in a country where dance is so important, and to step on stage at the Bolshoi Theatre was very, very, it was meaning a lot to me. And I remember this like one of the, you know, not just something for me as a recognition, but recognition to all the people and all the years that I passed since I left Mexico.
And did you know before, I mean, and I'm not talking about the prize, but when you were doing this premiere, did you know this is it when you were doing it, that it was going to be the performance?
Well, you know, this nomination happened after, so I had no idea. I just knew that that was one of my dreams, to dance that role, especially because of, you know, the whole story. Like, Romeo and Juliet was one of the first big ballets I watched when I was still living in Mexico. At that time was Cranco's version, from John Cranco. But this story was something that had a very strong meaning to me when I was young. So actually getting nominated with this role and having a premiere of that ballet with Nacho Duato, which is one of the choreographers that I always dreamed to work with, was it was just, I think it was also kind of destiny. You know, when the years pass, I realized that there were many things happening before in my life that could show me later that there was a meaning about.
It's wonderful. So, but Elisa, this has not been your most important achievement in life. And I know that from having heard us in different interviews. Your most valuable treasure has been becoming a mother of a beautiful girl, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So how did you embrace being pregnant, and how do you combine being a mother and a first dancer?
Well, I think, first of all, it's something that I really wanted. You know, I dreamed of being a mother, and there was a point in my career where I just felt like there was something missing, and there was an emptiness, and I thought like career doesn't give you everything. And there was this moment of being a mother. I wanted that. So it's all about organization, you know, like, yeah, like every mother in the world can be a professional and do their job and still be a mother and dedicate love and time to your child. Yeah, it's less hours of sleep, more time of making my life organized, and sometimes I'll be dedicating less time to myself. Or let's say the same amount of quality of time, but just more compact. And yeah, and I think my daughter has given me so much love and so much motivation that it just makes life better.
So talking about kids, as you have already noticed, I have here an amazing guest. Her name is Cecilia Rumpelhardt. She dances ballet. She's 13 years old, and she prepared a set of short questions for this occasion. The dynamic we want to do is every time she poses a question, we need a brief and spontaneous answer on your part, Elisa. So, and this would be our beat.
What do you do when you are stuck on a scale or a combination?
I practice every day. What do you do when you must perform and you're lacking motivation?
I go back to my roots, I ask myself why I am here.
Your toes not dead in your point shoes.
They are dead, but they are as strong, they are as strong.
What is your favorite ballet move?
Jumps.
What is the best advice you have received regarding ballet dancing?
Show must go on. Listen to your heart. Discipline, dedication, and passion should never go away. Train every day. Eat healthy and love yourself.
So Ceci was also mentioning the pain in your toes. It is known that a professional dancer career demands lots of sacrifices, including having to bear everyday pain and aches. How do you manage everyday's physical pain?
Well, I have to say with the years you get used to it. We have different, let's say, types of pain. Something when you learn a new choreography, and of course your muscles have to get used to it. There are pains that are chronic, so you always have, maybe your Achilles or your back or something. I try, of course, not to take any tablets. I think through the year, what helped me the most is training exactly, when you start to stretch again and in the morning you start to do your routine, your class, somehow your body gets warm and then the pain starts to go away. So when you get cold, that's the problem. And of course, if there is a situation where the pain is really bad, like you learn to know your body, then sometimes a tablet can help.
You were talking about pain, so I wanted to ask you, how do you cope with criticism?
Well, this is one of the things that ballerina has to learn to live with. I think not just a ballerina, any person. I think to be able to improve and to be better in what you do, you have to learn to get criticized. It's more about, I think you have to learn to see it in a positive way. Of course, there are different ways of saying things, so you can get it in a, it can kill you or it can just make you realize that you're making a mistake. But this is how it is for ballet. You have a mirror every day. So you every day have to see yourself and see, oh my God, this is not working. It doesn't look right. And of course, you have to be strong enough to accept that it doesn't matter how high you are, if you're a principal dancer or if you're a corps de ballet, we all need to get corrections and we need to improve. We are human beings and we have to work on that. So first thing you get after a performance, most of the times it's not like it was great. First thing is, oh, this went wrong and tomorrow we have to work on that. So it's part of I think there is a moment where you have to accept that this is part of improving and making a better performance. So you just have to live with it and you have to be strong. And through the years, we all have to learn to live to understand this.
Yeah, so building on to that, have you ever felt personally offended when a teacher yelled at you?
Well, I mean, there have been times where I didn't really feel good about it or there was a comment or a situation, but of course it hurt me. But I many times what I try to think is get the advice, get the good things of it, and the things that hurt and you don't like, try to erase them from your brain and your heart. I think any person, when you get a correction or somebody tells you, yeah, this was not good, this was not good, it's always painful. You can get hurt easily. But there is the moment where you have to be strong and just, more than being strong, it's just to be aware that this is part of your life and your career.
Thank you.
and those who were seen dancing were thought to be insane by those who could not hear the music, said once Friedrich Nietzsche. According with your experience, Elisa, where does the ability to connect with music comes from?
Well, I think it's something humans being have, you know. I think there is this, any person, when you play something, people start moving, people start feeling. It's a way of expressing yourself. It's like happiness. We move and we jump, and it's exactly what music gives. So I think there is this inner connection. It's something more, I have to say it's like magic. You know, music moves you. And I think there is this connection that you cannot avoid since you are a child. It's like when you are in your mother's stomach, it's the same thing. You feel this connection. So it's something that comes, I think, from really inside our heart, our soul.
But why would there be people unable to let go and dance?
Yeah, I think it's... we go back to the point where people always think more about what others will say. You know, and I think this is something we should try to avoid. Of course, it's not easy, but it's exactly what we also try to do on stage. Sometimes we also maybe feel insecure about something, but we have to let go and take this out. So I think people should really try to just feel it and not care about what people around will say, because I think we all have some beautiful way of expressing ourselves and to do it through movement. And actually, this is kind of a therapy too, you know. It will... Being able to show yourself, to move, it's a way of also opening yourself. And I'm sure this can also bring a lot to your personal way of being with people.
Have you experienced like these differences regarding a certain culture that they more maybe self-aware and didn't want to be ridiculized? And there's other cultures where they just go with it?
Yeah, I think there is a difference. I think there are countries that people are more used to, you know, move around and let themselves go and not be shy, and some people who are more reserved, let's say, you know. But I think any person can open themselves. It's just a matter of trusting yourself. You know, I think we all have this in moments where we can just let go, and every human being is able to do it. It's just have to sometimes just listen to your heart and let your body go for it.
And not taking yourself so serious, right?
Yes, of course.
Well, no, you're going to be guilty of a lot of people dancing in parties now.
Yes.
How do you connect music and movement?
Well, you know, it's, of course, there is a way of learning it. Through the years, we learn to, let's say, even the coordination of how your body moves exactly to certain music, or the choreographers are always telling you what you have to do, so they guide you. But I think there is also this inner way of your body reacting to the movements. And what I find amazing, it's... sometimes you dance something and a couple of years you don't perform it. And the day you have to do it again, sometimes you don't, if you try to think of the movement, it doesn't come to your mind. But as soon as the music plays, your body remembers. This is something that I don't know even how to explain. There are moments where I'm really, I don't remember exactly, but I listen and my body, the muscles remember what they have to do exactly in this music. So it's something magical. And I think it's something that's why dance and music are so connected, and we need each other to
wow.
survive.
That sounds incredible, right?
Yeah.
So while dancing, have you ever been so centered, absent of any wandering of the mind, that you suddenly find yourself in an absolute balance, no noise around, just you in silence? And if yes, could you be able to describe that feeling?
Yeah, of course, there have been moments where I'm completely in another world. It's, you know, it's, of course, in ballet, you always have to be concentrated. You always have to think where, in what part of the stage you're stepping, if you are on the music, if you are together with your partner, if you... There are so many things that a dancer has to be aware of when they are doing a live performance. But there are moments... I don't know if I have to say it's just complete, full of beauty. It's a moment where you can just let go and nothing matters, and you just have so much joy that it's and then you have to go back to being concentrated. You know what I mean? It's a very specific moment where I cannot say if it feels like flying, because of course I cannot fly, but where
you can. Well,
yeah, trust me, you can.
Well, when I have a partner,
at least it looks like it.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, I remember being sometimes in a lift, you know, they lift you up and then they're running. Let's say there are a few moments from certain ballets that I remember that I've been feeling that, like they bring you up and you have the lights on your face, and suddenly my partner ran with me on the arms, and you just feel like this air through your face and this moment, like some people will say moment of glory. Yeah, because you just feel, it's such a beautiful feeling, you know. And then this exactly second of magic where you are in another world makes you forget, not forget, but to understand all the moments, difficult moments you passed to get to that point were worth it.
Hi, we would love to hear your comments and learn about what you see. Share your input at www.ccpodcast.com and follow us on social media. Oh, I almost forgot. To accompany us in this season's journey, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And now let's continue with CC.
I love to dance, and I was wondering the other day, why is controlling my movement and being good at it so satisfying?
Well, because I think it's, you know, you dedicate yourself, your discipline, you practice every single day to get to a point. And the moment you reach that, it's like giving, you know, you're proving yourself that you made it. And it's a moment of complete happiness. Because then from that point, you can go even higher and you can dream with more things, and you will have to continue practice to keep that moment, because this moment can work today and tomorrow not. But exactly this challenge, I think, is something that it's so important, not just for ballet dancers, but for any person in the world. When they do what they love and they dedicate themselves and they get to a certain point, then it gives you motivation to continue to dream higher and to become better.
Elisa, you are so proud about your Mexican roots. You have not only become a fantastic ambassador to your country, but also a strong force in promoting classical ballet dance in Mexico and overseas. From an identity point of view, as a Mexican dancer, what has been, in your belief, your contribution to the international world of ballet?
Well, I do love my country, and, you know, living in Mexico and coming to a world where ballet was, you know, Mexico was not well known for ballet. You know, it's something that it has been happening through the years. People get to know more and more Mexican talented dancers. First of all, this gave me strength, because being in a different country with different people, I had to find a place where I could feel safe. And I understood that being from that place made me look different. And many people liked that. Many choreographers were attracted to someone that had another way of looking and another energy. And that was the strength. That's why for me it was always going back to my roots, the place where I could find peace and clearness of what I want to do. But I think one of the contributions I can do, and one of the things that I always dream of, was placing Mexico in the map of dance world. And I think this is something that I work for. And I think not just with me, of course, with the people who are living Mexico and showing around that there is talent in my country, but also going back there and bringing things to my country, something important. So that's why I also created a foundation, and I'm doing things in Mexico because I want people to be connected. I wanted to be like a bridge that connected the people who were not knowing anything about Mexico in the dance world and people from Mexico to go and see things. So this is one of the aims I have, one of the dreams, to place Mexico in an important place for dance.
And now the same question, but the other way around. What has your closeness to Russia, to European culture, and there's so many languages you're able to communicate with, and I'm not only talking about the five languages you speak, but also physically, your body language, and what you have learned from your teachers, directors, choreographers, colleagues, musicians. Let's take everything into a melting pot. What have all of these given you to become the artist you are today?
Well, you know, I have learned through many years, through many different people in the world, all the people you just mentioned now, they have given me a lot of, I learned a lot, discipline, how to be, the dedication. I think the most important for an artist is to get rich in the way of knowledge. Traveling through different countries, seeing different ways of working, working with different choreographers, different traditions, different point of view, different ways of enjoying life, of seeing dance, of techniques. You know, there is different types, different techniques in ballet world. So all this experience has given me a lot of base. And this let me grow up as a dancer, but also as a woman. And I think all these years and dance world have given me a beautiful life. Even though sometimes it's very difficult and there are moments of being sad also, no? Because life is not always perfect, you know. But all these years have given me a wonderful life. I feel happy as an artist, as a dancer, as a woman, as a mother. And everything that went through the path of my life has come to this point where I feel really complete. And this is also thanks to dance, thanks to all the world of dance that has come towards me.
And Elisa, you're known for your elegant and kind ways, and not only on stage, but rather also in the way you treat each person that crosses your way. Despite being the prima ballerina from one of the top 10 companies in the world, you are one of the most humble people I've ever met, so far away from becoming a diva. And you always help others personally and through so many projects in combination, as you were telling us, with friends and, of course, your husband, Michael. And as an example, in 2018, you organized a certified course, Classical Dance Pedagogy, that brought to Mexico experts from the Vaganova Ballet Academy of Russia and the Bolshoi Ballet Academy to train 32 ballet teachers at no cost. You did this through your foundation.
Yes, we would love to learn more about your foundation and the programs you are now involved in Mexico and in internationally.
Well, my husband and I created this foundation because we had exactly the same wish of helping other dancers start their career and to also introduce dance to Mexico, to the public, to make people understand and to love dance. I think in life it's wonderful to get people to help you and to, this is a blessing. But I find even better to give. I am very happy to be able to help people. And I think in my career, I got help. So it's the less I should do is also to help others. And the way I can do it is offering maybe experience from other people, because this is the only way you can also grow, you know, to learn to things from people who have experience in different careers, in different techniques, you know, when I'm talking about dance. And of course, with help also from my state, from the government of my state, we could do all this for free for the people. So that was a way of sharing knowledge, of sharing ideas. And I know that in Mexico, there is a lot of people who, without the possibility to do these things. So why not to do it?
If there was with so much talent.
Well, exactly. Yes. Mexico has a lot of talent. And I think nowadays we have more and more people around the world. So I think this was something that made me very happy. And I think it's not just nice to get things, but to share things. It's something that makes me really, really happy.
So we have come to the end of our interview. Thank you very much, Lisa. Just like your dancing, this has been an authentic, magical, and powerful interview.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And I hope people go to dance, to see dance, to enjoy it and to love it.
Thank you, Ceci Rumpelhart, for your singing and having helped me co-host this great episode.
Thank you so much, Ceci, for having me. And thank you, Elisa, for answering my questions so fulfillingly.
Pleasure.
Thank you to all our listeners, wherever you are, for having allowed us to share time with you. So please be sure to check this episode description, shall you wish to check the Elisa Carrillo Cabrera Foundation, as well as the coming projects and presentations of Elisa Carrillo Cabrera, first dancer of the Stadtballet Berlin. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.